My name is Rudy Kelly, and I am an Aboriginal.
I am Chief.
My dad was a great chief of the Tsimshian Nation, beloved by his people. But at home, with his family, he brought anger and pain. He told me that to succeed, I would have to leave everything behind. Now I'm on a journey to find out who and what my dad really was. The Aboriginal is an all-new CBC podcast. Available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast.
What is that?
That is the sound of the Saiga antelope. Now you hear that and you think, well, that's an interesting sound. It's an interesting looking beast as well. You might want to Google it. It looks like something out of Star Wars. Sounds kind of cool, too. For the last 20 years, those antelopes have been endangered. But last year, after conservation efforts, they were officially removed from the red list. Kind of a good news story at a time when we don't hear a lot of good news stories in the natural world. Mother Nature is facing an uphill battle. Melting glaciers, we have increasing carbon levels, you have a decline in biodiversity. But as I say, there is a little bit of good news. Nature conservation is working. A new study looked at more than 600 conservation efforts being made around the world and the impact that they're having on biodiversity. Stephen Woodley is one of the co-authors of this study. He's the vice chair for science and biodiversity at the World Commission on Protected Areas. He's in Chelsea, Quebec. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
When we talk about biodiversity loss, what does that actually mean?
Biodiversity loss is it means a lot of things. Basically, it's a code word for the decline of nature. And nature is declining all around us. We have probably a quarter of all life on the planet at risk of extinction. We have a million species projected to be at risk, to put those in real numbers. We're seeing decline in ecological services to us. In short, these are our fellow creatures on this spaceship Earth, and they keep us alive. We're part of an integrated system of life, and the decline of life on the planet is not good news for us.
How much of this is our fault?
Virtually all.
Virtually all of it.
Virtually all of this decline is attributable to humanity and the fact that there's 8 billion of us on this planet and we're all searching for a better lifestyle. Yes, unfortunately.
The co-author of your study said to the BBC that if you read the headlines, the impression can be that we are failing when it comes to biodiversity, that's the only story. What are we missing from those headlines?
I think the story coming out of our paper is that Our actions to halt and reverse biodiversity decline can work. And we've shown that really clearly, that many, many things that we do, whether it's having protected areas or managing endangered species or better management of sustainable use of wildlife, they can work. And we just need to do more of it in order to halt this dreadful decline that we're on.
Let's get a definition, because when I say that, you know, the study found that conservation isn't just reducing the rate of biodiversity loss, but in some cases reversing it. What does that mean? What are we actually seeing?
It's a complex area we're dealing with when you deal with life. So the metrics are all different. If you look at protected areas, for example, one of the metrics you might use is whether or not protected areas halt deforestation. If you look in the Brazilian Amazon, the protected areas are highly effective at halting the deforestation, which has been chronic down there. Another, you open the show with a Saiga antelope. That's a species-based measure, and conservation efforts on Saiga antelope have been wildly successful, and that species showing great recovery. So a different metrics for different situations.
Does it mean a bounce back, or does it mean that we're just slowing the rate of decline of biodiversity?
Success can be different things. Ultimately, we want to halt and reverse biodiversity decline. But when you, if you slow the rate of loss compared to what's happening before the intervention, that's also good. It shows that your action is at least having some impact.
We'll talk about Canada in a moment, but this study looked at, what, over 600 conservation measures being taken around the world. You mentioned a couple. What are the ones that stand out to you? What are the ones that suggest to you that we actually are doing something that deserves that tag of good news?
It may be worthwhile just looking at the bigger context here. And the bigger context is that we have a nature treaty similar to the climate treaty. And the nature, we just signed a big new agreement under the nature treaty in Montreal in December 2022, mm-hmm. so very recently. And we agreed to a whole bunch of pretty radical things to halt and reverse biodiversity loss. We agreed to protect 30% of the world, land, sea, and fresh water by 2030. We agreed to restore 30% of degraded land, to have action plans on species at risk, to manage our fisheries and forestry better. A whole range of dramatic things set up in 23 targets. And they provide the context for this work. So you have to ask the question, well, can we do this? Are our actions up to the challenge? And I think the paper says, yes, they are. We just need to do way more of them and spend a whole lot of more money to halt and reverse biodiversity loss.
So point me to a couple of specifics. Again, we've talked on this program about, you know, what's happening in the Amazon and slowing the rate of deforestation there. What else? Give me another specific or two in terms of what you see as something that meets that measure and meets that demand.
Another big biodiversity hotspot in the planet is the great rainforests of Central Africa. So in the Democratic Republic of Congo, areas that are managed under forest management plans are far more successful at keeping wildlife and halting deforestation on areas that aren't. That's an example. Eradication of invasive species on islands all around the world, cats, rats, goats, mice, which have been devastating to those islands and wiping out seabird colonies. We've been wildly successful at eradicating those animals. And when really a couple of decades ago, we thought we couldn't do that, and in restoring those islands to great bounty. So there's good examples all over the place.
Is there anything, I mean, they're all different projects, but is there a common denominator, a factor that's running through all of them that you can identify?
What the study did was basically look at effect size. Every study was selected to have a so-called counterfactual, or what would happen if you didn't take the action. So those were the criteria we used to select the hundreds of studies that went into this meta-analysis. Mm. So there's not a common denominator, except you're trying to do conservation good and you're trying to see a positive outcome for nature. As I mentioned earlier, it can be increasing a population, it can be avoiding deforestation, it can be eliminating endangered species, it can be better management of populations that you harvest. All of those things we put on a common metric and calculated an effect size to come up with this conclusion.
A population that we have talked about in terms of it being decimated over the course of the years, and we talked about it on this program, is the salmon population in this country. Have a listen to some of the work being done here, courtesy of Rick Bailey, who is a band counselor at the Catesy First Nation in British Columbia.
The salmon are in crisis right now. Every year there's less and less salmon coming. But what we're doing here, right in the Catesy territory, in the Pitt River in particular, we've been doing all kinds of habitat restoration work up there ever since. There's creation of protected spawning channels. It's like a fork off of a main channel where there's salmon going and spawning. The natural habitat there is quite volatile. If we get a big rain, that water comes swooshing right down and it blows out everything in the creeks and rivers. We have seen the salmon going into these channels that we've built, the protected channels, we hope that that means there will be greater survival rates of the eggs, and we may see it this year.
So that's in British Columbia. I've seen that firsthand, that work in Yukon as well. And you have communities that are actively involved in helping to address biodiversity. How important is that? That this isn't just government, but it's the people who are there on the ground kind of getting their hands in there.
That's a great story, and it's so heartwarming to see the leadership of communities, and in this case, First Nations in Canada. The treaty, the global biodiversity framework that I mentioned earlier, is very focused on mainstreaming, basically getting everybody involved, from communities to businesses to governments. This isn't just the job of government to solve this problem. It's really the job of everybody, and the local actor stories are absolutely important and heartwarming. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. Here's a Canadian example. In the 1900s, at the early 1900s, we had virtually lost bison. We had virtually lost elk and antelope in this country. They had been overhunted, and we set up protected areas to conserve them all. And because we did that, we now have growing and flourishing populations of those three wildlife species on the planet. We didn't have a counterfactual for it, so it's not in this study, but it's an example of, you know, conservation action, and we've been doing this for a long time. I think we know how to do it. We just need to make it a priority, and we have to move faster and with more intensity.
And if you do, it's not all doom and gloom, that we can actually have an impact.
You can't underestimate the size of the challenge we're facing. Yeah. It is truly dramatic. But yes, there's lots of room for conservation action, and that conservation action gives us hope.
Stephen, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Stephen Woodley is the Vice Chair for Science and Biodiversity at the World Commission on Protected Areas.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.